guys, welcome to Vaudeville, and well, today it's a summer day, and I'm here with three guests. Two have already been here, and one is making our podcast debut. I'm here with Kat.
Hey.
Nicole.
Hi.
And our new guest, Frasier.
Hey.
So today we're going to talk about the Black Lives Matter movement, especially in recent events. As you know, the news has been ridden with protests and videos of recent activities that has caused an uproar in this country. So we're going to talk about it and just sit back, relax, and listen. So to start, we are going to start with the most recent event, which is a George Floyd video that was spread over Twitter, Facebook, every social media. There was the video was, you know, had people's reaction like in the comment sections. And so I'm going to ask each and every one of you your reactions to the video. And I'm going to start with Frasier. Frasier, like, what was your reaction when you saw the video?
So to start, I really didn't watch the video because I didn't want to be sad. But I mean, that really didn't affect the level of sadness, because I got really sad seeing the pictures and hearing that he couldn't breathe and things like that. It kind of, I don't even know how to say this, but, like, it kind of made me numb. Like, when things like this happen, I either one of the three things, I either get, like, super angry and sad, or I get, like, and try to, like, protest and stuff like that. And then, or I, like, kind of make light of it and, like, jokes, like, not, like, be so, like, not focus on the sadness. Or I just, like, get super numb to it, which I feel like is so wrong. Why should I be numb at this point? You know, that means it's like been happening countless times. But yeah, it was like the gist of my feelings. I got really numb to it. I couldn't, like, even though I was looking at the pictures and hearing what happened, I just couldn't process that it happened again, even though it's been happening for years, for decades. And yeah.
Yeah, I totally understand that reaction. I was, like, looking at this tweet where they said, like, if it's so hard being a black person and, like, seeing this, and then once this happens, you have to either talk about it all day or think about it all day, or try to distract yourself from such issues, which really it's an emotional and, like, physical strain, to be honest, like, in lots of ways. But now we're going to move on to Nicole. What was your reaction when you first saw the video or picture or audio, any medium you saw first?
Well, like Frasier said, I did watch some of it, what they showed on the news. I didn't watch the whole thing. I just heard him say, you know, I can't breathe and please stop. And I mean, my reaction was, at this point, it's not really surprising. I mean, we've been dealing with seeing these type of videos since, you know, after the Black Lives Matter movement started, after Trayvon Martin. And I mean, it's just another day in America. And I just think that, you know, it is messed up, but it's like Kamala Harris, she tweeted about how, you know, this has always been happening, you know, just the fact that we now can do videos from our phone, that it's really, like, becoming more prevalent to us. But I mean, this stuff happens every day. And I mean, until we unite and fight against it, it's never going to stop. So that's my opinion on it.
Yeah, I saw that tweet too, where people are saying that it's not like there's more racism now, it's just that there's an inclusion of the video camera, and it seems that it's rampant, but it has always been rampant. It's just that people were not aware, and now people have to face it head first. So, and now we're going to move on to Kat. Kat, what was your reaction to it?
I didn't watch the video either. I could not watch the video. I things like that are very like disturbing and very upsetting to me. And, you know, I'm of the belief that like I don't need to watch it to understand it, you know. a lot of people on my timeline were talking about, and like I definitely agree with this sentiment that like, you know, continuing to like post videos of violence that's like committed against people of color, like just kind of like normalizes it and like desensitizes people to the continuation of violence. And like why, I don't know. It's just like really upsetting to me to like see the last moments of someone's life, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just like really sad and really upsetting. And like Frasier said, like, it's like at a point now where it's like, you see the posts almost every day, and it's just like, you know, how do you even continue to feel sadness after this much time? Like, it's like you become numb, like Frasier said.
Yeah, I totally get, especially when you talked about the video, because people were saying, oh, you know, in defense, why aren't they showing any videos of like black on white crime, or, you know, all those white on white crime? And someone did really like tweeted underneath that, yeah, it's gone to the point where even white people have the privilege of getting their debts in private, and it's not spread amongst the public. And black people have their debts constantly shown every single day, like it's slaughter and it's like regular and all those kind of things, that they are not even provided privilege to like at death. So it's I totally get that sentiment. I totally understand that, because it's just so painful. But in also, like, a lot of people don't know this is happening until they see a video, which I'm saying, like, because there are a lot of, the educational system also fails us in a way, because a lot of schools don't even teach black history or black oppressions. I literally, this is me in junior year, talking to another junior in college, and I said, oh, you know, black and brown versus Board of Education did this, and the guy turned to look at me, I was like, what? And it was like, Brown versus Board of Education, didn't they teach you that in history class? And he was like, no. So you don't know Thurgood Marshall? And he's like, no. I'm like, what the heck did they teach you? Like, it's so, I didn't even know what to say at that point. I started like Googling it and like kind of showing him that, you know, didn't you know there was segregation? He said, yeah, there was segregation. And I said, okay, what ended segregation? He said, he doesn't know. They didn't teach him. And I was like, this is a junior in college, you know, and he doesn't know Brown versus Board of Education. Not as if he's from another country. If he was from another country, it's understandable, but he's American. He went to an American high school, and they didn't even talk about that. And it's really heartbreaking that it's until someone shows him a video that he knows that there is some kind of racial oppression happening in this country, because the educational system never, you know, gave him that education, you know, that's necessary to know. But he only knew Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, and then I was like, there's so much more beyond that. So now we're going to go, because immediately when the video showed, well, the cops were fired, people wanted justice, because you don't just kill someone and just get fired from a job, and that's that. It's like Amy Cooper, who was calling the police wrongfully, and she just got fired from her job, and there's no repercussions for what she did. And so people got pissed and started protesting. So, like, now this is random, I'm going to start with Kat first. What did you think about like the protest that happened? Like, is there, because people have seen it and like, oh, this is a good way, but this is a violent way. But I just feel like any way that a minority group ever protests is never right. like, to be honest, if it's a quiet protest, it's wrong. If it's just kneeling down, it's wrong. If it's, you know, sit-ins, is wrong. If it's a whole riot, it's wrong. So what was your reaction to, like, protests and the whole focus on the looting rather than the protest itself?
So I just wanted to say, like, for anyone listening, also for, like, reference, we are, most of us are in Houston right now. We all, most of the time live in Houston. And today, the protest, going on in Houston, that's happening, like, right now as we are recording this, just for, like, a bit of context and, like, reference. you know, I think the protests are amazing. I think they're so empowering. I think we're at a point in time where people can't take this shit anymore. And, like, I am very anti-capitalist. You know, I'm a socialist communist by, like, political ideology, I guess you could say. And, you know, people busting down Target and catching the shit on fire or whatever, like, to me, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. These corporations steal from us all the time. They steal our time in exchange for pennies, and they steal our labor, and we are entitled to live happy, fulfilled lives. And, like, you know, why is it that there's plenty of people living in the United States today who are working 40 plus hours a week who can barely pay their rent or barely pay bills? And, you know, especially with the quarantine happening, like, political tensions are rising with, in combination with all the deaths of all of these people of color. Like, we can't even fucking quarantine in peace. You know, and I'm here for the looting. I'm here for the protests. I think anyone participating in them is incredibly brave. You know, there's a literal global pandemic going on, and people are so fed up and so willing to fight that they are willing to put their health, like, on the secondary. And to me, that is, like, a beautiful showmanship of camaraderie and, like, of solidarity. And, like, it just shows that, like, when the working class, like, bands together, like, we can change. Like, our current labor laws that we have today are in place because of previous labor strikes, labor reform. You know, we only have child labor laws because people fought for them. We only have a 40-hour work week because people fought for that. And you know, just, like, a little side note here, a 40-hour week is, like, still way too much, you know? And it's just very empowering. It's very, very empowering to see all of these people coming together. To me, it's just a symbol of, like, all our systems beginning to crumble, especially with this pandemic going on. I mean, more and more people are waking up and realizing that the systems we have in place are fake. They were made by cis white men hundreds of years ago, and they just don't hold strong in our current climate and, like, with people's needs. And yeah, I think, did I answer your question?
Yes, you did. You did that wonderfully well. Yes, a lot of people are pissed that they are looting Target and, like, they're taking jobs from people. But, like, to be honest, the way the system is that whereby the CEO of Target gets a big chunk of money and just, like, trickles some coins down to the people working long shifts. And he's just like, or she, I don't know who the heck the CEO of Target is, lay on their bed and watch all this money cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching in their bank account, and, like, just say, oh, you know what, you know, give them $12 an hour, that's good enough, you know. But really, it's not. There are a lot of bills to pay, there are a lot of things people have to do. And so if there are people taking anger on Target, yes, but the thing is that if they're taking anger on small businesses, that's where, you know, the wrong lines. But I don't see, actually, I never actually saw a video of them breaking any small business or anything. So, but people are like, you know, as long as they are not affecting the livelihoods of other working class people, well, go ahead. and not affecting the lives generally of anybody else. Like, no one is dying from what they are doing, or no one is losing their medications based on what they're doing. I feel that's okay, because they have to find a way to let out all the steam, all the anger, you know. Frasier, what was your own reaction to, like, the protest and, like, the media's portrayal of the protest and the focus on the looting rather than the protest itself?
I honestly totally agree with Kat, like, how there's really nothing, I don't see anything wrong with these protests. But then at the same time, there are videos of undercover cops who were starting some of the looting and the rioting, but instead of, like, doing it on the major corporations, they were doing it on, like, the low-income housing, they were doing it on the small businesses. So those were the people who really started the looting and the rioting in the actual communities, you know, like. But then I feel like the media just goes around and then portrays it like, oh, these savages that don't, like, you know, like, it's just like, you, I feel like they're not paying attention, the media particularly is not paying attention to the actual root of the problem, which is, you know, there needs to be an entire cleanup of this justice system. There needs to be an entire reform of this justice system and the police system. Maybe even eradication of the police, to be honest, because they were started basically. Ooh, I cannot contain my thoughts. But basically, the root of the police system is, it just doesn't, like, I just think there needs to be a reform of the police force. Just, it just doesn't, it's just not protecting people. Like, it's just not. Or there needs to be more, I don't even know how to contain this, because I think I'm thinking so much. But bottom line, I don't find any fault with the riots or the protests. I'm like, people are angry, like you said earlier, like any other protest form, like, that minorities, you know, create, there's always going to be a problem with it. When people were kneeling, when people were peacefully kneeling, it was a problem. We're disrespecting veterans. When people were wearing shirts that said, I can't breathe, like, you're being disrespectful. It's just no form of protest is going to be, you know, accepted if it's protesting, you know, for POC rights or, you know, Black people to not be murdered. So I think they really pay attention when people are like, actually showing their emotions and actually being angry, and like, and showing how angry they are. I feel like they actually pay attention, and that's my take on that.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying, especially when you said people wearing a shirt and their mode of protesting. Like, literally just some weeks ago, a group of, you know, pro-Trump white people were protesting with guns. Like, guns the size of, like, I don't even know, like, I've never seen guns those like that size before. And it was so, like, calm with the police. Like, literally, they were spitting in their face. This is during the time of pandemic. They weren't wearing masks. They were spitting in the face of the police people, wondering if they are going to get sick or not. And, like, it was fine. Like, literally, like, everyone was like, yeah, they are fine for their rights to golf, rights to have a haircut, rights to freaking go to the grocery store. Is that what you're looking for? Like, now it's time to, a minority group of people are protesting the death of someone, and it seems like they're going too far. Like, it's so annoying, but I have to calm down. Now I'm going to move it to Nicole. Nicole, what was your reaction to the protest? The focus on looting, the media's portrayal of the protest, and stuff like that.
I agree with both Kat and Frasier that, I mean, protesting is the only way we're going to get attention to this. I mean, the only reason, like with Ahmaud, the only reason why the murderers, because they're murderers, the only reason why they were prosecuted is because people were angry and saying stuff. I mean, if the video had never came out and if people were not saying anything, I bet you those people would still, those murderers would still be free today because they had been free for 3 months before people found out about it. So, I mean, I think it's important to speak up. And I think that, like Frasia said, it doesn't matter what you do. They're going to think that anybody protesting against police brutality or for the rights of non-white people, it's going to be seen as, like Trump said, thugs looting and stuff like that. And when he said, when the looting starts, the shooting starts, like that's how white people feel. That's how the majority of older white, especially older white people, that's what they feel like. If you're destroying property, you deserve to get shot, no matter why you're destroying the property or what type of property you're destroying. And it just reminds me of when the Virginia protests were happening, where all those white supremacists were gathering and they had fires and the guy stormed through that crowd of people and killed that girl. I mean, Trump said there were good people on both sides. Like, what does that even mean? But these people protesting, they're all thugs. So I just think that, you know, the racism is so prevalent and so showing, and it's been so obvious since people said they like Trump because of what he has to say, how he speaks his mind. Well, everything he says is classist, racist, misogynist, every ist under the book, and homophobic, transphobic. I mean, I just think that, you know, protest is the only way we're going to bring recognition. I mean, like, I just think about Colin Kaepernick, about how he knew when he did that the first time that that was probably going to be it for him, that his career was going to be over and that he probably would never play football again for a major league team. And he still did that because you need to recognize what's going on, and we need people like him to speak up. And I think it was really important how the mayor of Minneapolis, I think his name is Tim. He's young. He's younger. He's like his 30s or something like that.
Jacob Fry, and, something like that.
Wait, what?
Jacob Fry? I think that's his name. Jacob Fry?
Oh, yeah, that's his name. That's his name. He's younger. And, you know, most, I mean, like with Michael Brown, with Sandra Bland, with a lot of black people who have died at the hands of the police don't even get fired. You know, they may get charged they'll get fired or they'll get suspended with pay. That's how it usually goes, is they'll get suspended with pay. And the fact that he fired them, I think, is a step more than what older people would do. And I think that that just shows that younger people need to be in power, that older people, we need to get them out of there, that younger people need to be leaders, because younger people they understand the world more, to me. I think, you know, we're not stuck in our ways. We're constantly learning, researching, you know. And I'm not saying that young people can't be racist, because they can. But I think that it would just be better if young people were in power. And the fact that he was visibly very upset about the whole thing that happened is very telling of how young people can really change the world. And I think that, I mean, they have charged the main policeman with, they have charged him, but I think the most important thing to remember is that there were three that were standing around not doing anything. And that is the basis of the police department. There may be 1 out of 100 who will actually shoot the black person, but the other 99 cops will just stand and let it happen or even help cover it up. And that's why we need to dismantle the police department, have more restrictions for the police department. And I mean, I shouldn't be able to just walk in and take a test and become a cop. I mean, that just shouldn't be able to happen. I mean, you can't walk in, take a test, and become a lawyer. You have to study and learn and, you know, be good at your job. So that's what I have to say about that. Protesting rules.
I there's some points you made that I really wanted to hit on the head, especially when you said Jacob Pryor was young, and because the video of him reacting to like what Trump said, and he was so visibly angry. There was this comment right below it, like, "Oh, he's young." I'm like, that's what we need, you know. People in Canada don't like Justin Trudeau just because, you know, he's fine, but people like him because he's young and he understands, you know. It's like the more old people, it's like, you know, old people already have their perception of how life is, or, you know, some of them it's hard to mold their brains to understand the recent activities. But like younger people who are growing up in these activities or growing up in this sense, we are becoming open-minded, we're easy swayed, and that's like exactly the type of mind we need, you know. You look at Congress, and like I'm sure the average age is like 60 something, because you have some people in Congress that are in their 80s, and you're just like, what are you doing in Congress? Like, you shouldn't be there. Like, you should be in retirement doing something else with your life, you know. But I guess, I don't know, 60 something, like the average, to be honest, is maybe even 70 something, to be honest, because there are some people who have been in Congress since before my parents were born, not joking. And like, what would you be doing? What kind of bills would you be passing? You have no idea of anything that relates to social media. You have no idea of anything that relates to the recent activities that are happening. And so you don't really know what's going on, and how will you be able to pass bills that really affect younger people? So this is also like a knock on the head for younger people to go out and vote, because younger people are the ones who vote the least, you know. I don't get it. Like, there are a lot of young people who have indifferent feelings about politics. You don't have to like politics to be involved, because at the end of the day, politics just stands at your door and literally pesters your life. Because at the end of the day, there are bills that will be signed and you'll be pissed, and you just look back and say, oh, I wish I voted for this other candidate, you know. Even if you don't like politics or you're not into politics, it still affects your life either way. So it's you should go out and vote. Like, we need more younger people to go out and vote. Old people, even with their arthritis and their sicknesses, go out to vote. So what stops you from voting? You know, it's your vote to count. Your vote to change a lot of things. Your vote will, because at the end of the day, when there was a problem with Mark Zuckerberg, and Mark Zuckerberg had to sit down amongst the Senate to talk about his Cambridge Analytica and all those kind of things, the Senate didn't understand what he was saying. Like, oh, Facebook? I don't know Facebook. I literally type on a typewriter or something, or write on paper. It's, you have to go out and vote for such bills that affect younger people to, you know, go through the Senate, through and be signed, you know. Well, now our presidential candidates are between two old people. So it's not much of an option, but like, look at the candidate who looks out for younger people more than, you know, older people. Look out for candidates who look out for the working class, and rather than the, you know, upper class, which isn't like a lot of difference between the two candidates, but like, you have to pick one at least, you know. And if you're not happy about the one we have now, well, you can change it, just saying. So let me move on before we get stuck with age. We're going on to talk about Breonna Taylor. I never saw the video. I don't even know if there was a video. But I saw, literally, the summary of it is that Breonna Taylor was an EMT, and some cops in non-uniform did not announce themselves, barged in with a warrant for a guy who they already have in custody, and while she slept, and her, knowing that, you know, her husband or boyfriend, her boyfriend at that time had legal firearm and was scared that it was burglar, so he brought out the firearm and started shooting, because, you know, it's understandable in that sense, because you're just like, you know, someone is trying to rob me, and the police retaliated by shooting, and Breonna Taylor was shot. She was shot multiple times, and she died. So, knowing this, I want you guys' reaction to the news about Breonna Taylor, and I'm going to start with Nicole this time.
Yeah, actually, as much news as I've been watching, I did not even know that they were talking about Breonna Taylor on the TV. That's crazy. I did not know that they were talking about her. I found out about her through change.org because I sign a lot of petitions and I read about her. And I just want to reiterate that, like, it was the wrong house. Like, her house had nothing to do with the warrant, with the dude, with anything. It was the wrong house. And they had already caught the guy. It's like, I mean, do the police not talk to each other? I really think they just don't give a crap anymore. Like, I just don't think they care anymore. They're just like, you know, we can do what we want. And, you know, nobody's going to stop us. Look at all these people who have gone free. You know, I mean, it just... it's so crazy, and it just makes me think about the guy who was shot in his own apartment by that white lady cop who said that she feared for her life after she broke into his house, thinking it was her house, even though it was on the wrong floor. I mean, I can't see myself personally going to the second floor and thinking that this is my apartment when I live. Yeah, I was in Dallas and thinking like, oh, I live on this floor, even though I live on the first floor, whatever. Anyway, but how the black judge gave her a hug and how the brother said, that he forgave her. I mean, it's like if a black cop shot an unarmed white man for a mistake, that when the guy was unarmed, wasn't even doing anything, I mean, he would have gotten the maximum anyone could get. And I just don't understand how people can be so blind and say, well, this isn't about race. This is about whatever you think it's about. Like, it's completely about race. Like, I haven't even heard anything about those cops being charged in the Breonna Taylor case or anything. And I just think that it's, you know, it's to the point where you can't even sleep. You can't even be with your family. Like the lady who was shot, I think her name was Ayanna. No, it wasn't. I don't know. But she was shot in Fort Worth after her neighbor like called to get a wellness check. Like, you can't even, like, check on your neighbors anymore. You can't even, like, use the police with what they're supposed to be used for, which is to protect and serve. Like, I should be able to say, hey, I need a wellness check on my neighbor because her door's wide open and I'm afraid to go over there myself and, like, not expect your neighbor to get shot. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's, you know, you can't call the cops anymore. Even, like, people in non-working class areas don't want to call the police. And it's like, what are they used for? I mean, they're not used for anything except to pillage and use their badge for things that, you know, you shouldn't use your badge for. Steal, rape, pillage, murder. They do it all. And it's disgusting. And... Why should they have guns? I mean, you can tase a person, you know, you don't have to kill, you don't have to like shoot a person. And I mean, I just think that, you know, it's just all adding up because first it was the Ahmaud and then right after that it was Breonna Taylor. And then right after that it was George Floyd. And I just think that, you know, when is enough going to be enough? Like, when is, you know, who and what are we going to do about it? You know, it's one thing to say that we're sick and we're fed up with it, but it's like, you know, what can we do about it? And I mean, Thomas Jefferson said, if you aren't happy with your government, you need to overthrow it. And even though Thomas Jefferson was a raping, pillaging slave owner, I do agree with him on that one thing that he said. I'm done.
Yes. Because when he said, oh, why do the cops have guns? I coming from a place where cops rarely carry guns. I was shocked. Shock is an understatement. When I saw how easy and, like, because you rarely see in the news... in the UK, oh, this person was shot today, or the cop shot this person, because you don't see cops carrying guns, you know. It's rare, unless it's like really, you know, needed. They don't go around holding, they carry batons, you know, yes. They hit people with the batons, yes. But they don't carry guns. And I realized that once you're carrying gun up and down, there's always a feeling or a need, that, like some kind of spirit that calls you to pick it up and, you know, use it. Like, it's like, oh, last resort, you know, out, you know, shoot it. I even saw, because there's this show I watch on Netflix called 100 Humans, which is kind of like a scientific research show. And they showed like people giving guns to people and just saying, oh yeah, you can only shoot people with the guns. Like, and they set in distractions by bringing people with phones. You know how people come with phones and, like, you know, come forward and it looks as if they're stretching out a gun. And they realized that almost all of them, including the black people in the research, were likely to shoot the black person holding the phone, the innocent black person. It just screams a lot to you when you see that happening. I mean, these people are not trained police people. You expect trained police people to not be susceptible to such you know, prejudice, but it's there. And they have, to me, I just feel like they have to take all the cops and redo like a new set of training. Like, you do physical training, that's not all you need. Physical training is not all you need. You need to go through emotional training, you need to go through some psychological tests. Because I feel like some of these cops who end up, you know, being abusive to their own family members and to their own wives and kids, some of them are not fit to be cops in the first place. So, but they are not going through that, you know, mental training. They are not going through that, you know, intense training that a cop needs to have. Like, when I was younger, I watched Police Academy and I thought, okay, being a cop is hard. Like, it's a long process to go through. Then Police Academy was released in like 90s. That's totally a different time from where we are now. It seems like it's so easy now to be a cop, because I see a lot of cops who don't even seem to have physical training or any training. They're just wearing the uniform and just like, okay, yes, I can arrest people now. I'm happy, and let's go about terrorizing people. That's not it. I mean, cops need intense training, because these are people who are apparently are the ones who are supposed to, you know, be the ones to look out for the law, you know, in a way, like, to make sure the law is being done. But it seems to be beyond that now. The police system has totally, like, gone out of what it's originally supposed to be in the first place. So I don't know, it's very devastating. But going to move on to Kat. When Breonna Taylor's I don't think there was a video. I didn't see a video, but when Breonna Taylor's story was spread over the news and maybe Twitter, because it seems like her own was more rare, unless you were looking out for it, you didn't seem to see it. But what was your reaction to that?
I mean, yeah, I didn't see a video about it, but I did see a lot of posts about it on Instagram. That's kind of, like, the only social media I really use, but everyone I follow, like, all my friends, you know, everyone's, like, leftist, so when stuff like this happens, I mean, it's just, like, all over Instagram. It's really sad. I mean, she's 26 years old. Like, I'm turning 26 in a month. Like, I can't imagine that happening to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a tragedy. Like, she's so young. And she was an EMT worker. You know, she was, like, a good person, like, a productive person in society. And, like, Nicole said, like, the police just, like, came in literally for no fucking reason. Like, cops just, like, think they're, like, above the law, you know? They're the ones who enforce it, so they get to choose how it's enforced. And unfortunately, the police system and, like, the police state is a corrupt system that was founded on racist politics. So, of course, it's still racist today, you know. When Obama was elected in 2008, a bunch of people were saying, like, oh, yeah, we live in, like, a post-racial society. You know, like, what is that? That's not, like, a real thing. So, yeah, I feel like everyone's kind of, like, already said what I have wanted to say. Everyone's, like, expressed similar thoughts to, like, how I have about it. It's incredibly sad that it was, like, a woman. You know, a lot of the times, unfortunately, we hear about when things like this happen, we hear about, you know, Black men dying at, like, the hand of the police state, and this time it was a woman. And it just goes to show that, like, no one's safe, you know. And, you know, just this week, a Black trans person was killed by the police. It feels like every time I get online, another person is dead. And it's like, even during this time where people should be coming together, you know, the police are just continuing to intimidate and, like, victimize people.
It's now becoming the main news. Whenever you hear it constantly, like, I see videos that were not even, like, popular or, I guess, on social media, videos of police brutally beating and shooting people of color. And it's not that rampant and it's not that well known, but it seems like to be happening, like, almost every day, and it's really scary. Actually, as someone who's a person of color, like, I literally go to the store and kind of present myself as someone who isn't, I guess, not trying to portray, draw attention to myself in a sense, you know, not trying to look like, oh, someone who is likely to steal from my store so they won't call police on me. You know, nowadays people are just rampantly calling police on people of color. And it's really, like, I can't go to the park without having that fear that maybe someone will call the police on me, and I don't really know how to deal well with the police. Also calling it into people, like, people with mental illnesses that are not able to communicate well in that sense. Because literally there was this picture I saw of a neighborhood where they wrote on this person's daughter, please police be quiet and be calm when you see this guy, he's autistic and he doesn't know how to, you know, communicate well, and he just yells, so it seems like he's not listening to you, almost like when you talk to him, doesn't he understand what you're saying, that you should please be careful when you come to sound. And yes, he's a Black person, so you shouldn't think of him like, oh, he's resisting arrest or anything. He doesn't understand what is going on. The neighbors have to do that for him. They have to put that all over his garage door, so in case that the police come, they know how to deal with someone like that. It seems like, I guess in the minds of police, everyone is the same, but they don't put into perspective people with learning disorders, mental disorders, mental illnesses, and all those kind of things into perspective, which escalates the whole situation. We even saw the Denzel Washington picture or video where he de-escalated a situation between a homeless man and the police. What would have happened if he didn't actually come out from his car and, like, you know, stand in between the two of them? Because the homeless man did not seem to know how to communicate what he's trying to say or what he's trying to do, and he had to be the mouthpiece of that homeless man. So now we're going to move on to Frasier. What was your reaction to the Breonna Taylor incident?
My reaction was just, like, shocked that, well, not really even shocked, because like we've stated before, this has been happening over and over again. It's just like, how do you, like Nicole was saying, how do you, after already capturing the person that was responsible, like, or they were attempting to capture, you still go into the wrong household. But what shocked me was that they arrested her boyfriend for responding like a normal person would respond, thinking that an intruder comes into their house. Like, who wouldn't respond with, like, you know, attempting to, like, get their intruder out of the house? Like, you know, they arrested him with murder charges. I was like, what the heck? Like, he murdered his girlfriend. Like, that was really shocking, but at the same time, obviously not shocking, because really, I feel like they would, the police force would really do anything, or really really charge anyone except for their own people, except for other police officers. I'm like, I don't know, that just shocked me, but there's really nothing else to say. Like, I was just like, I don't know, like, it just, I just felt like, dang, like, okay, well, before then and before the Dallas incident where Jean, I don't know how to say his name, like, the man had got shot in his own apartment, like, I thought, okay, well, at least, like, if we're not, like, you know, being murdered in the streets, at least we can come home and, like, be okay, like, well, at least when we're in our own homes, like, we're safe, like, no one's gonna come in here and shoot us, like, you know, like, the police isn't gonna come in here and shoot us, like, but then, obviously, those two incidents proved otherwise. I'm like, okay, nothing's going to change. They're, you know, every walk of life, every place in life, you have to, like, have this anxiety in the back of your head, like, what if today's the day that my brother or my dad is, like, you know, stopped by police, or someone calls the police on them, or what if, like, you know, my sister or something happens to them? I'm like, okay, like, I feel like I always have to think about this in the back of my head. Like, that's what this situations and these, like, past situations have been, like, just slowly building up this anxiety in me that I don't want to have. Like, I don't want to have, like, be in constant fear, like, that something's going to happen to me or my family members. But, yeah, that's really all I have to say about that.
Yes, I totally agree with what your thoughts on her death, especially when you're thinking of your own family in this perspective. Kat is about to go soon, so I need her to talk about her reaction to the Aubrey jogging shooting. This one is not even done by the police. It's, well, the guy was an DA, police, someone. But it's like civilians taking it into their hands to, you know, shoot people. Call it citizen's arrest, which I didn't know that was a rule in this country, but apparently it is.
So it's not.
It's not. I thought it was like a law, because it said it's citizen's arrest and it's normal in Georgia.
It's like a common saying that people have, but that's not, like, legally credible.
Right, you can't shoot someone and say I was making a citizen's arrest.
So, Kat, what are your thoughts on, like, the video? I'm sure this one was, like, the video was everywhere.
Video was everywhere. I refused to watch it, like every other video. And it was really infuriating, especially my friends who are people of color. You know, a lot of them were saying, which, you know, I'm not a person of color, but I agree with that, like, seeing shit like that is fucking traumatizing, you know. Seeing trans people getting murdered is traumatizing for me, so of course seeing black people getting murdered, that's also traumatizing, you know. And it was just, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people who share videos like that are white people, but then their activism, or whatever you want to call it, their political engagement ends with sharing that video. You know, most of people who share stuff like that are actively engaging in anti-racist politics and activities and applying that to, like, their everyday life. You know, people sharing those videos, it does nothing. Like, it does nothing except, like, exploit the death of black people, and it's disgusting and it's traumatizing. I mean, how would anyone feel if someone they love died in such a horrific way and then people were sharing it on social media? Like, to me, that's so, like, dehumanizing. It's like people don't see this person for the life they lived. People see them for the death that they had. And, you know, you share the video on Instagram, on Facebook, or whatever, but are you calling the district attorney? Are you calling the police station demanding for these people's arrest? You know, like, are you sending money to the family to bury their loved one in a humane way? Like, I don't know. Like, there's so much, a lot of people in our generation feel like sharing something on social media is, like, enough or, like, the end of it. And, like, it's not. Like, you sharing this person being killed in this horrific and, like, dehumanizing way doesn't change anything, you know?
Yes. I also get that you have to go now, so...
It's okay. I'll stay on.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's good. But yes, one, it's actually that the guy who videoed it is now arrested. He's, yes, as you told, a white man. But the person who it was involved in sharing it was the attorney for the father and son guy. He was hoping that when people see the video, they're going to say, oh yes, they were innocent. And I was like, what?
What a dumb move.
He's the one who incited the sharing of the video, and that's why you only see that particular clip of him running towards, you know, the father and him getting shot after that. And I was like, this just, like, thank God it backfired, because he had this whole idea that once people see it, they'll be in support of the father and the son. I was like, no. And without the video, I wouldn't have known that it happened in February. Like, it wasn't in the news anywhere. It's until the video came out that people were like, this happened. And I thought it happened during the pandemic, to be honest. But it happened before the whole stay-at-home order was even issued. And I know the video, it's like, you are smearing the family, you're smearing the dead person. But if not for the video, I wouldn't have known. A lot of people wouldn't have known that that happened, to be honest. Like, I was so shocked to hear it was February. I thought, okay, yes, this happened in April or something like that. But then I looked back and people were like, oh no, it was February. I was like, then why didn't it happen? Like, they weren't arrested. They kept on living their lives until the video came out. It's when it's after that fact that they got arrested. And it's so heartbreaking that for people of color to get justice, people have to disrespect their death for that to happen, which it shouldn't go that way. It shouldn't be that way, you know. It should only, if it have video, they should only give it to the police, and which you can't even trust with such a video. You should only give it to, you know, law enforcement people, because it's, at the end of the day, you don't even know what they do with it. They just keep it in the evidence box, and that's the end of it. And nothing happens at, like, till that time. Like, oh yeah, he was a DA person. You know, he's one of us. So it's infuriating. But I'm going to move on to Nicole, because I see Nicole has something to say about that.
Well, I mean, it did take a long time, but it's mostly because that guy who used to be like a private investigator or whatever, he was friends with the district attorney. So I mean, there's like corruption and all of that in there, you know, and I think that, you know, on the one hand, it is horrible to have to see these videos and for someone's family to have to deal with, you know, every time they get on Facebook or every time they get on social media, that they have to see their own child being murdered. But also, like, if that video had never come out, I am 99.99% sure that the people who killed Ahmaud would have never been prosecuted, because it was only because of other people's outrage that the district attorney recused himself and they were finally charged. So, I mean, I think it's like a blessing and a curse to be able to take videos and stuff. I mean, that's why when Rodney King happened in the 90s, that's why it blew up so crazily, because people knew that this was going on. I mean, Rodney King was definitely not the person the first person to be beat up and assaulted by the police for and not doing anything. But it was one of the first times that people could actually see it with their own eyes, that the person was unarmed, that he was beat up so badly, and that caused outrage. And I think it really, you know, changed the mindset of a lot of people who thought that, you know, well, we're not seeing it, so it must not be happening. And I think that that's what's happening with this whole video, with these whole videos, is that, you know, I mean, I hear a lot of people say, oh, well, racism's back. Well, it never left, sirs and ma'ams. It's just, we're seeing it, you know, from a camera. And I think that it's important, you know, like Kat said, I mean, like when Obama became president, everybody was like, racism's over. Like, what does that even mean? You know, because the reactions of white people when Obama became president, like calling him a porch monkey. And then, of course, Trump doing the whole birther movement, starting the whole birther movement. Like, was he really born in America? All that. Of course, that was our great Trump who did that. And, you know, it's just horrible. It's horrible. And also, when I say white people, I don't mean like white people like Kat. You all know what white people I mean.
Hashtag not all white people.
Frasier, what was your reaction to it? I think you have like, I don't know, 3 minutes to say it before I go to the next segment, because the timer for this thing says it has to be in 3 minutes. So.
Oh yeah, I don't really have much to say, because a lot of people, both Nicole and Cass, covered basically most of what I thought. But I just like, it just highlighted, the whole situation just highlighted that once again that we need to like reform our police system. Like Nicole was saying, like earlier, one of the questions, how you don't just take a little test to become a lawyer. Like, I feel like there needs to be like, you know, strenuous like requirements to actually become a police officer. Like how physicians need to go to school for 4 years to become have residency for more than 3 years, 3 to 5 years to actually become an attending physician. I feel like, why don't we have the same requirements, or at least, you know, some actual like lengthy requirements to actually, you know, teach these people, or, you know, weed out the racist people, weed out the people who are bigots, like, you know, actually have people who want to be there and not people who just want to get on a power trip, or people who want to, like, you know, have power for the first time in their lives, you know, things like that. It's just crazy that this person did this, you know, he committed this crime knowing full well, like, I can get away with it because I have these connections, like, I was an ex-police officer. I know the DA. Like, it's just, I don't know. That was just so mind-boggling to me. And that's really it.
Yeah. We're going to move on to, like, the next segment where we talk about our personal relationship with Black Lives Matter and just being a person of color, or interactions with people of color in situations like this. Nicole, what was your, like, personal interaction with racism, with being a person of color, and just your identity? And, like, when things like this happen, how does that, you know, affect you as someone of color?
Well, I mean, I'm mixed with black and white, so, like, throughout my whole life, I had people telling me, you know, you don't talk black, you don't look black, all this kind of stuff. Like, I would never think you were black because of this, this, and this. And, like, it wasn't until I got older that I realized just how racist and hurtful all of that stuff was. And, you know, it wasn't just white people telling me that, it was black people too. So I felt like, you know, I didn't really fit in with black people or white people until, like, I got older and I just realized that some people are just assholes and bigots and racists, and not everybody feels that way. But so, I mean, my whole life has been just like an identity crisis until I got about, I want to say, like 18 or 19. And then I discovered you know, really like the power of social media, that not everybody feels the way that people in my small Mississippi town felt, you know. And then when I came out here and, you know, this place is so diverse, it's so unlike where I grew up, that, I mean, I just discovered like a whole new world, which was so important for me. And, you know, I think it's, you know, in a way, living in white America, I know for a fact that I'm lucky to be mixed, because so many, I mean, colorism is a real thing. And I know that plenty of people have told me like, oh, you know, you're so lucky you're mixed. You're so lucky you have good hair. You're so lucky this, this, and this. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And how, like, when a lot of people talk to black girls, they'll be like, oh, well, you've got to be mixed with something because you're so pretty. Like, no, that's not how it works, you know. And I think it's important for people, especially for mixed people, to help uplift black people of all skin color, because, you know, we do have more privilege than darker skinned people. We do. And that's horrible, but it's the truth. And I think we should use our privilege to uplift other black people and to help black people who are darker skinned get to be in a position at least where we are. And, you know, I know a lot of light skinned people, they take their privilege and they run with it and they're assholes. And, you know, but some people are just assholes. It doesn't matter what they look like, what race they are, what color they are, what gender they are, you know. But I think that as a light skinned community, we need to help, you know, our dark skinned people. And if, you know, if a dark skinned man comes to you and says, as to a light skinned girl, and says, I want to have babies with you because I don't want my babies to be dark, run. Because I.
Yes. Well, I've not had the light skinned or mixed experience. My more own experience is coming from someone who is like an African immigrant, and like in my country, there's a lot of colorism where like the one of the top companies is the bleaching companies, where people try to bleach their skin to be to look lighter. Because lighter is prettier or whatever, to people in my country. If your hair isn't relaxed or doesn't have a chemical to make it straight, isn't pretty. Do you know how many people from my country have told me, won't you relax your hair? And I'm like, I don't want to. Like, really, I had the relaxed hair growing up, but then I cut it and my natural hair came out. And people are like, oh no, it's not pretty. You know, all those kind of things. It's always rough and always this and that. And I had like, okay, you know, when I was younger, I always wished I had long or blonde hair, you know, with white skin, because lighter skin was more appreciated. I remember one girl who came to our school at that time, and she was very light skinned, and people were like surrounding her every single time. She was mixed, and it was so glorified. Like, till this day, it's glorified in my country. And the funniest aspect is that for a long time, I didn't even know it was a race issue, because we didn't know anything about race. Growing up, I didn't know the difference between, you know, white and black person. I just thought we all were the same. And so when they taught us race in, like, in my geography class, they said Caucasian, they said this and that. They were teaching us in our geography class, and in my mind, I was like, yes, I have to be Caucasian, right? I was like, they were like, no, you're not Caucasian. I was like, huh, well, that's a bummer. I want to have, you know, blue eyes, blonde hair, you know, be white. I was like, you know what, when I came to this country and I realized the strife, the divide, I've written a lot of poems about, like, not wanting to be differentiated for my blackness, and I should just be seen as a human being instead of as someone of my color or whatever. Especially in high school, where like my accent did not help at all, and like even though it's a minority centered high school, people thought I wasn't black enough. I never listened to rap music. I'm not a fan of rap music generally, and they thought that was a problem. People say, oh, you dance like a white person, in my country, when they tell you that's like a white person, it's more or less like a compliment, which I'm like, that shouldn't be a compliment. But in my high school here, when they say you dance like a white person, it's not a compliment at all. And whenever I try to talk to them, they don't seem to understand what I'm trying to say. So I felt like I wasn't, you know, black enough for them, even though my skin said I was black. And I was an advocate for black rights and black lives and all those kind of things. But that wasn't enough for a lot of people. And in my own case, it's not as if like I'm mixed with anything. Literally, like a girl came to me and said, "Oh, what are you mixed with?" I'm like, "I'm not mixed with anything. I'm just, you know, African." And they're like, "Oh," like they look so disappointed. And I was like, "What am I supposed to say? Am I mixed with Arab?" Like, I don't know what to say. Like, what am I supposed to say to, you know, to be a part of this, you know, community? And at the end of the day, most of my friends were even Hispanics, in my school, because we had a common talk about like football, not American football, but like, you know, what they call football in Spanish, but football in English. So we usually hung out together, and then the same people who were like, "Oh yeah, you are not like black enough," were the same people who were like, "Oh yeah, why are you hanging out with a lot of Hispanic people?" And I didn't know what to do with my life. I was confused about my identity. I just wished I had longer hair, that my hair wasn't the one that defies gravity. Like, once I lose it, it's always like up. I had a lot of wishes. I just wished I was lighter. I wish my, like, I took more or less my dad's complexion more than my mom's complexion, because my dad's lighter skinned. And it's really destroyed me for a long time. And then I started seeing all these things happen, and I tried to distance myself to not present myself as black, so that, you know, I won't get arrested or whatever. You know, when I'm in a store, I have to overdress myself, you know, to not, oh, seem like I'm only wearing sweatpants and that and this, and, you know, like, it's to, because there's a sense of irresponsibility that a lot of store owners and, you know, people who call on, you know, call the police on black people, there's a sense of irresponsibility that they attach to blackness, which it's not true, you know. Like, literally, I was in my church, and they were talking about grade, and I was telling this lady my grade, and this white lady literally turned to me and like, "Oh my God, you're smart for a black person." And I was like, "Excuse me." Like, excuse me. that made me so pissed. Like, I couldn't do it. I had a lot to do. Like, when I was thinking of my career, they kept saying, "You have to remember you're black. You're not going to be able to enter that industry. You are not doing this." So every single time I'm yelled at for either not being black enough or being too black. So I really didn't know where to stand in that sense. So now I'm embracing it in my own way, because I can be black and like ballroom music. I can be black and like show tunes, like plays and all these kind of things, you know. I can be black and like football, European football, and not American football. Like, I don't understand American football, to be honest, or basketball. I can be black and just accept, you know, be who I am and still fight for black lives, you know. I don't have to be a specific type of black. I don't have to be, you know, I don't say the N-word to this day, because I feel like my ancestors were not the ones who were slaves. So they never had that yelled at them. So I cannot say that. I'm not in that zone of comfort to say it, because it's just like I feel like I'm treading on parts where I'm not supposed to tread on. Like, I'm black in color, but I'm African, you know, and like my ancestors were never slaves. They were never slaves, so I can't say that, you know. But I still fight for, you know, black lives. I still fight for you know, a lot of these, like in a lot of countries where, like in Europe too, in the UK, in the UK where like there's racism, but like it's not, I guess, the American type of racism. It's a different type of racism, and it's harder to maneuver the European racism, because they are racist in a very secret but very open-ish way. It's hard. It's like you're not sure if you're hanging out with racists. You're not sure, you know. It's, you know, they said the devil you know is better than the angel you don't know, or whatever. Yeah, microaggressions, and it's you don't know. Like, growing up, I didn't even know, like, that people didn't just want to see me because of my color. I just felt like maybe there was something wrong with me. in that sense, but I've dealt with a lot of identity crisis, a lot of wishing that my eyes were blue. I read Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye and I felt so connected to the character. Yes, you don't have to be, you know, Nicole's life of going through being a mixed person can also apply to people who are, you know, black and from Africa and still not be black enough in the eye of, you know, people, which is sad, but it's the world we live in. It doesn't mean you should run away from your black side, because at the end of the day, they will still arrest you because of, you know, your, the color of your skin, you know, and everything. So it's I still have to advocate for the black lives, and all those kind of things, but I think I've spoken too much. But next is Kat.
So obviously, we've talked about this earlier in the episode, but for y'all, those of y'all who can't see me, I am a white person. so obviously, I do not have the same experiences as my friends here. But I will say that, as far as like identity crisis goes, I mean, I totally relate to that. You know, my entire life I had, you know, very bad like gender dysphoria and body dysphoria related to my gender identity, and it took me 23 years to figure that out. Frasia, quite. So you know, I definitely can understand, you know, or empathize for what y'all are saying as far as like identity crises go. You know, I am a queer non-binary person, so you know, I always never really fit into any sort of box or category, I guess you could say, so I never really felt like I fit in. Yeah, so I definitely can understand what y'all are saying. Obviously, I have no idea what it's like to be a person of color, so I'm not saying that it's the same experience. I'm just saying that I can definitely like empathize with you all for what you're saying. And what was the other thing that you were asking us to talk about, Naomi?
I'm sure you have like relationship with people who are, you know, people of color, how that relationship has also aided your own identity and how that's aided your perception of the Black Lives Matter movement.
Got you. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I mean, when we were like recording this, I was like asking y'all, like, I mean, do y'all even want me on here? Because I'm not a person of color. And Frasia like said, you know, like, yes, of course, like, you know, what you have to say has value to it. And like, you know, if you know, when things happen to people in the LGBTQIA plus community, I mean, of course, like we need people who are not queer to advocate for us as well. You know, like I think about, when I think about this, I think about like the scene in Salem, when the white people started showing up to the protests, the violence stopped, you know, because the police are there to protect them, you know, and I guess us. And so like, that really resonates with me all the time. I think it's really important for white people as well to talk to other white people about stuff like this, because it's really sad to say, but unfortunately it's true. A lot of white people are willing to listen to or trust white people more than people of color. So if it comes from a white person saying, listen, these are the systems that are in place that continue to oppress people of color and black people and indigenous people here in the United States, I think white people are more willing to listen. And I think that unfortunately a lot of people think it's a lot more credible when it comes from a white person, but it's like, as long as you are opening up someone else's eyes. Like, that's the best you can do. I think that in this point in time, just saying I'm not a racist is like not enough for white people. White people cannot be or should not be complacent in seeing racism, both on a micro level, but on a macro level as well. I mean, if you're at the grocery store and you see someone who is being put in a situation that is racialized and things are like heating up or something, like, it's your responsibility to step in. Like, use your white privilege to help people who do not have that, and use your white privilege to help aid the voice of people of color who are crying out for help, and use your white privilege to try to make changes in your community that will benefit everyone, and especially the people that you love. I'm reading everyone's comments in our Zoom section right now, and people are putting in quotes, "I'm not racist, I have 5 black friends," or "I dated a black person, so I can't be racist. My sister is married to a black guy and I have a mixed niece. How can I be racist?" Yeah, those are all things that white people say. And that is, you know, personal racism. So there's like personal racism and internalized racism and institutional racism. And all of these work in tandem with each other to perpetuate racism and racial politics here in the United States. And, you know, earlier we were talking about like President Obama, and, you know, something I will say too is that identity politics will not save us. You know, just because someone is a woman or just because someone is a person of color does not mean that they are on our side and does not mean that they are inherently good or inherently working to destabilize the racist systems that are in place today. And that's something that's like very important to me, is to working to dismantle that rhetoric that identity politics will save us. Because you see it all the time. I mean, like with Hillary Clinton, you know, so many people were like, "Oh yeah, Hillary Clinton should be president because she's a woman." Like, bitch, do you know how many fucking people she's killed outside of the United States? Like, no, like we should be looking at politicians and people that we're putting in power fully, looking at them with a microscope fully, getting the full picture, using intersectional analysis in order to make changes to the way that things are today.
Thank you, Kat. Frasier?
To talk about like my identity and what I perceive as my identity. Growing up, I think I had a really tough time because I'm obviously dark skinned. And just like Naomi and Nicole were saying, like, just like growing up, but I was like the total opposite of what you guys were saying. Like Nicole saying that she was like getting those comments about she's not black enough and she might be too black for her white side or whatever. I don't know. I can't remember what she exactly said. But, and then Naomi was saying how she felt like she wasn't black enough. But then I felt like I was too black. Like, I felt like, okay, I'm like so black. Like, I can't be accepting these, like some spaces, like even academic spaces. I was like, okay, like I'm a little bit too black, like, or I'm a little too loud, or I'm a little bit too like too much. Like, I just felt like there was always like a two in front of my personality. And I just, oh my god, it makes me like emotional when I talk about this stuff, because I don't talk about this stuff a lot. But what Naomi was saying, I felt like growing up I saw light-skinned girls who literally have the same personality as me just being accepted, like just like that, like, and by everyone around me. And I'm like, okay, I'm literally the same person as this person. The only thing is that's different is that she's lighter than me, or he's lighter than me. And I felt so I felt so angry, to be honest. I felt so angry that one little thing such as like skin color or you know who my parents were really affected every social situation around me. Yes, Nicole, that's same. she said, how I feel about skinny people. Yeah, I just felt so like, oh my God, like there, this one thing, like, cause I feel like there were so many other things I could change about myself, but you know, I couldn't change my skin color. I mean, obviously there's bleaching, but I never wanted to like touch that. And like Naomi was saying, how her African heritage played a part. Like on my dad's side, we're Caribbean. Sorry, I'm reading the comments, but on my dad's side, it's Caribbean culture, and in many of the Caribbean islands, there's bleaching problems. Like there's, and especially in Jamaica, like there's problems with bleaching. People want to be lighter. They want to be, they just want to have a looser curl. They want to do all these things. And it kind of like seeped into my mind growing up, like wanting to be lighter, just, but I never like, I never really took the steps because I knew it would like affect me, like my health physically. So that's what always stopped me from taking those steps. And then also like having my, I think a big part of me not like doing anything like super dangerous growing up was my mom. Like my mom actually, like she's dark skin as well, cause obviously, but, my mom really took the steps in like talking to me. She was like she talked about her experiences growing up. And honestly, like thinking about those experiences, oh my God, I'm gonna cry. But like when my mom would talk to me about like her experiences growing up as a teenager, and like even the experiences that she went through, like now I was like, how is this shit still happening? I gotta go off camera. But yeah. I guess like she was like one of the biggest reasons why I didn't do anything like crazy, because she was like, okay, she was like constantly like reinforcing that, like just because you're dark skinned, it's not like, you know, anything limiting. Like, you know, you can still do what you want to do. You can still like, you know, be who you want to be, and you're still like beautiful. And I remember her, but I remember this like talk that she told us, like, oh my God, she, like this like really like, this speech that she had gave me and my two sisters, she like brought us all together because one of my sisters had like got in trouble, but for something that another classmate of hers had done, and she had gotten in trouble for it. And my mom had brought us all together, and she was basically saying like, I'm not mad at you for doing this, or I'm not mad at you for, you know, getting in trouble, but she was like telling us like, you always need to like be aware of your actions. And she's like, I know that's not something you know, you should have to think about, because we were like really young. She's like, I know that's not something you should have to think about being this young, but you know, people are always going to look at you as if, you know, you don't have the knowledge, you're less than. So she was like, you have to try twice as hard to like be in the same positions as some people who don't try as hard. And I just remember that being like stuck in me, like still to this day. Like, that's why I don't know. I just feel like there's always more I can do to like be like, to get to a better position. I don't know if that makes any sense, but like, oh, I like these comments. Yeah. But yeah, like that's like what always has stuck with me. And I think when the Black Lives Matter movement came about, even before, but well, because the Black Lives Matter came about in 2013, and then like before that, when Trayvon Martin got killed, and then his freaking murderer got free, I was so pissed. I'm not gonna lie, my whole like consciousness had a shift in that year. I think everyone had a shift that year. And then the Black Lives Matter movement, it really made me think, okay, maybe like this is like the start of us like actually unifying, because there's always that divide like between, I felt like in the Black community, there's like, that's dark skin, light skin, even brown skin. I was like, what the heck? Like that always irritated me to like my core growing up, that there was that divide. I just want to be Black, and I want that to be enough. Like, you know, But that's what I felt when the Black Lives Matter movement came about. Like, okay, this is the start of us, like, unifying. This is the start of us, like, you know, going places. And then, but then there's all, after the Black Lives Matter movement, there's, like, other movements that are, like, you know, kind of grabbing on to the Black Lives Matter movement and, like, leeching it, like, All Lives Matter or Blue Lives Matter or even other POC movements that really, honestly, some people don't even give a shit about Black Lives Matter. They'll leech onto some black symbols or Black Lives Matter, and they'll, like, they'll twist it and make it their own and completely disregard Black Lives Matter and completely not even advocate for black people, even though I know Black Lives Matter movement and there's other black, a lot of black people advocate for these POC movements. That irritated the fuck out of me, I'm not gonna lie. Disregard my language, but that irritated me to my core. And then, like, just going back to, like, some identity things, but, like, I remember this one moment where I, even though I had always been aware, obviously, there's racism in this country, I remember this one moment where I was like, okay, like, this shit really happened. Like, you know, like, this is actually happening. When I was in Maryland in 2015 or 26, I think it was 2015, I was 16 years old, and my mom always went to this freaking 7-Eleven. She always made me drive her to the 7-Eleven. Like, I was some sort of errand girl. So like, I drove her to the 7-Eleven, and I remember I was just, like, walking around. I wasn't even there to buy anything. I was just driving her. I was just walking around. I had, like, I had no pockets. I had tight leggings on with no pockets. I had a short sleeve shirt on. So I had no pockets. And then I remember going up to the register after my mom had got all her stuff. And then the cash register was like, what did your daughter steal? And I remember, like, standing there, like, what the fuck? This man really is, like, accusing me of stealing when I have literally no pockets on me, literally no hand, like, I had no purse. I was like, what the hell? I remember my mom had just, like, she just threw all the stuff that she was going to buy on the counter. She was like, I'm never coming back here again. Like, and I was like, what the fuck? And then I remember thinking, why the cash register was freaking Indian. He was a minority. And I thought, okay, I never thought he would say that because I thought, okay, well, at least if, you know, I might expect this from a white person, but I thought, this minority, he's got my back. Like, you know, minorities, they understand the struggle. Like, they get it. I was like, what the fuck? And that always stuck out in my head. And I feel like when people talk about, like, I really want to believe in POC solidarity because, I mean, I believe in it because I want to stick up for, you know, Asians, Hispanics. Like, when I see injustice, I want to address it no matter what the case is. But that, like, every time I think about that, I, like, POC solidarity, I'm like, okay, maybe it's not really the case. Maybe it's kind of fake, or maybe it's a pipe dream, because, you know, like, thinking about it and then you actually experience the total opposite. That it kind of stuck with me all the time. Like, it still sticks to me to this day. Like, I don't really have anything else to say. Kind of went for a loop there, but yeah.
It's okay, Frasier. It's the world we live in is, I really don't understand. Like, even in different cultures, there's, like, serious colorism. Like, literally, all my life I watched Bollywood, and literally the girls in, like, you know, Indian culture that were darker were harder to, you know, apparently give away for marriage, which I thought that was something, like, maybe my culture, that was, you know, only my culture, but it's all around the world. I don't understand why black equal to bad, you know. It's so, like, even when they did, like, this whole social experiment with kids where they put, you know, lighter dolls and darker dolls, and almost all the kids, including, like, darker skinned kids, picked up lighter dolls, and they asked them why, and they're like, oh no, that doll is ugly, it's not. And I'm just like, you know, it's, they're young and they're already having these perceptions of what is known as beautiful and what isn't beautiful. It's sad, but it's the world we live in, and we just try our best to change it because we can't live this way any longer. Like, it has been there for a really long time, and it's time to, like, totally change the whole idea and ideology of people when it comes to, you know, blackness, darkness of skin. You know, it's, people go through a lot to lighten their skin. People will have skin cancer because they were trying to lighten their skin and they used the wrong product, and that had an after effect on them. It's sad, but we just have to have our way to change it. And I'm so excited that you guys were able to talk about your personal issues in relation to race and personal identities, because it just seems like, oh, you know, it's only a certain type of people that go through identity crisis. Well, it's not true. We all do, you know. And this has been motivating. I'm so excited about this episode. This is like one of my favorite episodes so far. I love you guys, like Nicole said. Love you guys. Thank you so much. And to my listeners, do your best, to be honest, do your best to find a way to, you know, bring down the system we have now. Change the system. Be the change that we all need, you know. I'm not just doing this podcast so that, you know, it's for fun. Let's just talk, you know. We all have things to do. Kat should have left a few minutes ago, but she's sitting right here. Because we have...
I saw that it doesn't start till 8, so We're good.
But we all have things to do, but we are taking our time just to, you know, educate people. Because there are still a lot of people that don't get the whole idea of what's going on, and we need to tell them. And I'm so happy you guys were the ones to open up and tell them. So thank you so much. And goodbye. Don't forget to subscribe. Subscribe, follow. There are more contents to come. I'm being consistent now. So bye.